Welcome to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Hey, welcome back, everybody, once again to Tips from the Server Room. This is episode number 57 for August the 5th, 2014. I'm your host, Jack, and I am here to help you guide you through that magical world of networks, servers, and all things connected. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast. If it's tech, it's here. Check it out at techpodcast.com. Please check out my website if you have a minute or so at tipsfromtheserverroom.com, where you can comment on these shows. You can please also leave me a voice message, and I wish you would. Call in, don't be shy. 724-701-0550. Once again, that's 724-701-0550. It's a toll-free call for, I don't know that for sure or not, but check your local carriers and make sure it doesn't cost you any money to call it, but call in and leave me your questions on that voice line. If you have any questions or ideas for future shows, you can email me at jackstechcorner@gmail.com, and you can follow me on Twitter as at Technoman, T-E-C-H-N-O-M-A-N. First off tonight, let me give a large shout out to Mike Smith from the Mike Tech Show. I hope that if you're visiting from there and you're now tuning into this show, that I'm giving you what you need for those servers and networks to keep them humming along. If you have any questions, please drop me a note or a voicemail message. Once again, thanks to Mike Smith for playing that little promo I sent him, that little voice message, and I hope that you are enjoying my show as much as we enjoy Mike's show, and also Tech Vets, another great show that they produce there with Kerry Holzman. Very interesting to listen to. Tonight, I had the rare opportunity, very rare for any podcasters out there, to give me a call and email and say, Jack, you know, would you like to be on our show? We'd like to talk to you a little bit about your shows and what you produce. I was a guest on a show called Geeksters. Now, Geeksters is another great tech show where they talk about all thing geeky. If geeky is a word, but they talk to geeksters about geek. And it's a wonderful show. We had a wonderful interview tonight, and my hats go off to Martin and the host there. And and I knew I would mess up these names, and I'm very, very sorry. But Mitch, Martin and Mitch, Tim couldn't make it. Tim is another host on our show. He is a local guy for me because I am from Pittsburgh, as many of you know. And Tim is a Pittsburghese guy. I'm sure he's a Steeler fan as well as a Pirates fan and a Penguins guy. And I really would like to have talked to him. Maybe one day we can get together and have some coffee there in the city. So that's a shout out to Tim. If you listen to any of my shows that, hey, we can get together because we are very much local. Also, you can check out that interview, and I am going to put a link tonight in the show notes so you can check out the video portion of it, and it is on PodNuts. So if you go to podnuts.com/geeksters, you will find the podcast there. And I hope you tune into all their shows, not just my interview. Tune into all their shows. They're quite fun to get into. They're very knowledgeable guys, and it's a wonderful show to listen to. So tonight we're going to begin with an email, and if you notice tonight's show, if you're listening to this live on Spreaker, you'll notice that, hey, Jack's a little bit late tonight. He's not coming off at 8 o'clock. Well, that's okay, because the Geekster show ran over a little bit, and that's okay, because, you know, I know I've done a lot of interviews, and sometimes you have technical difficulties, and we had a couple, but it was pulled off quite nicely, and because the guys are professionals that do that show, so they pulled it off, and they said, look, we'll make it work. And, yeah, it ran over, but that's okay because I'm recording this show for you now. And if you're listening into your car tomorrow, which would be Wednesday, it doesn't matter because you're like, hey, I don't know when Jack did this show. But anyway, that's the power of podcasting. We are like the great DVRs of the world. because you download these things to your iPhones, you download these things to your computers, your iPads, your tablets, whatever you have, and you listen to it whenever you want to. So you don't really know when I recorded, right? Actually, right now it's about 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we're not coming off at the normal 8, but that's okay. Now, let's get started here with an email, and this is great email starting off because I just talked about the Mike Smith and the Mike Tech Show. Just heard you mentioned on the Mike Tech Show. Imagine that. See, already somebody coming to me with a question. Wonderful. I am just a PC guy, so loads to learn on networking systems admin. Listen to a couple of your shows. Excellent. Just what I've been looking for. And I really, really appreciate that. This came from Bill, and thank you so much for listening to the shows. I have clients on a work group, a peer-to-peer with a file server, which I have just upgraded to Windows 7. However, they still have some Windows XP workstations on the network. Pity, 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 pitiful. Now, if you're doing that hack, there is a hack out there. Search on the internet because there's a hack that you can make Microsoft believe that that Windows XP workstation is an ATM machine. And I know that sounds kind of out of this world and kind of silly, but and they will allow the updates for another few years to get to that computer. So you'll be keeping it safe with any patches because Lord knows we don't want an ATM machine hacked out there, right? Because we all use them, we love them, and we've grown accustomed to them in our lifestyle and our day-to-day journeys that we are using a Mac machine. So we don't want those hacked. The problem is that the XP machines keep getting locked out. Yes, I know, but finances don't allow upgrading all machines. However, two of the other machines are Windows 7, and they don't get locked out. Now, before the file server was XP and no issues. So what happened here was, in reading this, I'm taking that Bill upgraded their file server to become a Windows 7 computer. Because remember, it's a peer-to-peer network. Now, we know peer-to-peer only allows 10 clients to connect to that workstation acting as a server. And that is a limitation, but that's okay because he only has a few machines, so not a big deal. And if I can stress anything to you through these shows, never, ever, and we still have people doing this in my systems, and we stress it daily, never, ever allow anybody to store anything on their local computer because we know as network systems administrators that if that computer breaks down, we want to go and just, hey, here's another box. Happy computing, and we walk away. But if they store things on that hard drive and the hard drive crashes, uh-oh, mayday, red flag. So when it was an XP box, it was working just fine. Well, now he upgraded to Windows 7. Now, I have added a file server IP into each host file as there's no DNS server available. If you want to put a DNS server on that workstation, there is programs out there that you can find that are free to download. They're open source, and it will actually create it's a software package. It will create a service on a workstation, and you can have a DNS on your little local network, and it works fine. You can do that. The other issue is a Canon printer scanner I have set up, the path to the file server scan folder. And it was before, scan folder, as it was before, but after I scan, the XP machines get locked out of the shared drive. The scan sometimes ends up in a folder straight away, and other times it takes ages. They have, is it DryTech? A router. All machines have fixed IP and a couple of Netgear layer 2 switches. Now, there's a problem here because XP and Windows 7, apparently, I don't deal a whole lot with work groups anymore, but I did some research today because that's what we're here for, is to try to help you fix things. And what happens is it's Windows 7 has a newer layer socket, okay? Has a newer TCP/IP socket than what Windows XP had. That's just the way it works, guys and girls out there, is as we get newer computers and we don't upgrade everything, the backwards compatibility may be lost. So I started digging around, Bill, and you said, can you help, regards from Bill. So Bill, Thanks for the question, and here is a possible answer that I found for your issue. Now, we're going to walk through this, and I wish I remember the website I found this from today when I was sitting here at home doing my research, but, you know, it took... Anyway, this is I'm going to read the answer to you that this fellow found. It took a few weeks, but what finally fixed it was changing the registry settings as per link below. So there is a link. So I'm going to put this link in the show notes, Bill, so you have it. Both links below point to the same answer. The solution is taken from Aaron's answer on the second link above. So I'll post that one. If you go to on the Windows 7 computer, if you go to hkey_local, now if you've never worked in a registry, I hope you have. If you're in this business, you probably should have worked on a registry key by now. All you have to do on that Windows 7 box is open a command prompt or open a run command and type in regedit, R-E-G-E-D-I-T. That will open up the registry and you can do a little bit of registry hacking. Don't get too scared about it. It's okay. You're the specialist. You're allowed to do this. Look for hkey_local_machine/system/current_control_set/services/LAN/man server. So it's local area network, man server, must be manual server, right? /perimeters/size. Your choice for the registry keys are either 1, 2, or 3. 1 equals minimized memory used, 2 equals balanced, and 3 equals maximum throughput for file sharing and maximum throughput for network applications. Be sure to set this to 3. By default, it is configured to 1. So what it's doing is, I believe, after reading this and doing some research, I believe what's happening to that machine is it's saying, look, I want to use the minimized amount of memory. So it cuts the Windows XP machine off, says, wait, you're trying to use a lot of memory? Let's just shut you down. And I think that's what's breaking your connection. Now, it says that he applied this change 1 week ago and has not had a problem since. Prior to that, it was happening several times a day. And it says, thanks for all the help. So again, I will put this link in tonight's show so you have it. So if you go to tipsfromtheserveroom.com, show number 57, you'll see a link in there, and it'll guide you to this help file, and it will tell you how to do that. So if you didn't copy that down, if you're driving a car, and we talked about that on Geeks just tonight, it's illegal to text and drive, but I know a lot of you guys out there are bringing up a notepad right now on your phone, you're typing. Don't do that because it'll be in the show notes for you. Now, tonight we're going to talk about why it is so important, and I worked on this a lot today for my client computers. It is talking about the time server. So many people on so many networks seem to forget the importance of time. Synchronizing time across your network is so highly critical, and I'm going to tell you why. I have a lot of pointers here for you this evening in this show. Now, setting and maintaining time on our servers is more than just the desktop clocks. And I've had some interns, and I often refer to my interns when I work with folks, because these are guys that's just been through a two-year a technical college, and they come to me for 3 months. And when they're with me, they start doing the actual work. We start putting them into an actual working situation where they're actually technologists. You know, like, they don't play one on TV anymore. They are actually a technologist. And we want these folks to be able to learn stuff. Well, what happened one day, when they were out trying to connect some of our OS 10 machines, and if you're not familiar with OS 10, it's a Mac, they're connecting our Macs and they're joining that, they're binding it, it's called. They bind it to our Active Directory. Well, what we found out was the binding was not working. It kept kicking it out, kicking out, and kicking out. We couldn't figure out why. So after looking at it a little bit and looking at the clock and then going to a Windows machine and me determining out what our Windows server clock was set at, we found that there was a 10-minute variation between the two clocks. The Windows server, when I went to check on it, And I went into the time settings in the group policy management. I found out the time was only set to allow a variance of 5 minutes. So in other words, if your time, if your normal time is 10 a.m., and if you're trying to set up at Mac and your Mac says 10:10, it will never connect. It's a security feature on the server, and it's meant to be there, and it's meant to make sure that everything is synchronized within time. I don't really know why. I don't know who at Microsoft programmed that, but I guess it's a security thing, and they thought that if the time doesn't synchronize up, then maybe you're not in the same location. Think about that. Wonder if somebody from Siberia is trying to join your network here in Pittsburgh, and they're trying to bind a machine from Siberia, and they don't really know what time it is here in Pittsburgh because they don't know how to do the time conversions. That server's never going to let them bind it. So it's very, very critical that your time servers are synchronized. Here's something else that new people will do. And you may have ran across this because we run across it all the time. No pun intended. But the user, the end user, has access to change the time on their computer. I think that's, you know, something you can give the end user, make them feel like they're really needed there and that, you know, they should be allowed to change the time on their clock. But if the time server's off, and our time server's been off a few times, I'm not going to tell you it has not, because sometimes it loses time. Sometimes a server can gain time. We don't really know why. Some people refer to that as the BIOS clock. If you're using virtual machines, it's in VMware ESXi. There is a time setting, and a lot of people forget to set that. So the clock itself can lose time. I mean, it can just simply lose time altogether. And what's going to happen there is, very simply, the clocks won't match up. So the people change that time on their local workstation, and what they find out later on down the road is, you know, about noon, or it could be 10 minutes later, it changes back to the time it was. They don't understand that it's bound to the group policy on the server, so it's going back to the server time. So the importance to, let's see here. Okay, so that's that part. Now, let's go through some of this that I have for you tonight. Most people assume that the computer clock in servers, workstations, and network devices are inherently accurate. This is incorrect. Most of these clocks are set by hand to within a minute or two of the actual time and are rarely checked after that. There is the key element, folks. How many times do you check your server clock? I don't check it that much. The only time I check is when I'm working on a workstation, I look and I'm like, why is this clock 10 minutes off? I know that the server's off, so I'll remote into the server and I'll readjust the clock. Many of these clocks are maintained by a battery-backed clock calendar device that may drift as much as a second per day. Drift. Remember I told you it can go a little bit lower, it can be a little bit higher, either one. Having any sort of meaningful time synchronization is impossible in such clocks that are allowed to run on their own. Now, the importance of time synchronization in your network. In modern computer networks, time synchronization is critical because every aspect of managing, securing, planning, debugging a network involves determining when events happen. Can you imagine going to your event log and looking at your event log, and it's saying all this stuff crashed and happened at midnight, but you noticed it, you know, you were there during the day and it happened at noon? A big difference, right? That's a 12-hour span. Wonder if it happens when you're not there and you're like searching your servers for somebody that hacked your server and you're seeing that they came in at 2 a.m., but your clock actually was set wrong and maybe it says 1 p.m. That's why it's critical to go and check these every now and then. Keep an eyeball on your workstation clocks, and that will give you an indication of what that time server is doing. Time also provides the only frame of reference between all devices on the network. Remember I told you about that OS 10 machine? That is exactly what happened was. It is the synchronization of that time not allowing it to connect. It's the main device, the main reference on that network is the time. Without synchronizing time, accurate collating log files between these devices is difficult, if impossible. So following are just a few specific reasons. It allows us to track security breaches, network usage, where problems affecting a large number of components can be merely impossible if the timestamps in the logs are inaccurate. Time is also the critical factor that allows an event on a network node to be mapped to a corresponding event on another node. To reduce confusion in shared file systems, it is important for the modification times to be consistent, regardless of what machines the file systems are on. Building services or similar applications must also know time accurately. I have some clients. The clients do medical billing. If their time is off and a patient is seen at 9 o'clock and the bill goes out saying that they were seen at 8 o'clock, we have a problem. Some financial services require highly accurate timekeeping by law. That would be anybody in your systems, in your network, in your business that may be, and I know a lot of grocery stores do this because, you know, when somebody goes to work, they punch in on a register. When they punch in, it records their starting time. And they use that for payroll. So wonder if they say they punched in at 1, but your clocks are so far off that they actually punched in at 1:30. Do you not pay them for a half hour? Do you tell them they're liars because your system clocks was wrong? Now you see where time is critical. I hate time. I remember that song where it says, time keeps on slipping, slipping, slipping into the future, right? I don't like time. I hate being under time restraints my whole life. Everything is about time. But under computers, networks, and everything connected together, time is so critically important. The next thing is HIPAA security rules both require accurate time stamping. If you're working with the medical field, if you're working with medical computers, if you're working with medical servers, you better have your time spot on. Where'd that come from? England. Spot on, my friends. We talked about tonight on Geeksters how important it was for backup. We went over a lot of different backup solutions. So if you want to learn about backup, man, listen to Martin go off. He's amazing. We're going to have him on his show one night. We're going to talk about backups. But time is so important because what if you have your backup set to go off at 1 a.m., but 1 a.m. never really happens? Or worse yet, 1 a.m. happens sometime in the middle of the day when it's really busy. And next thing you know, your network comes down to a slowing, screeching halt, because you have no more internet connectivity and you have all this network traffic with all these backups going out. See how important time is? The network time protocol, the NTP, has long been the king of time setting software. Some companies solve the problem of synchronizing their networks by using NTP to go on the internet and get a time from a public internet time server. But this approach is prone to problems because the source of the time is beyond your firewall. This means that there must be a hole left open in your firewall. Remember, we talked about firewalls a few weeks ago? And what you got to remember here is UDP port 123 has to be open to allow the packets containing the time information through. And we talked about the more ports you have open, the more chances you have for vulnerabilities, people coming in and stealing your valuable information. So is this the best solution? Probably not. Time accuracy degrades when using an internet time server because of a systematical latency, delays between when the time packets leave the time source and when they arrive in your network. We think, now think about this. When somebody sends you an email, they're like, did you get it? And you're sitting on the other end. They're in California, you're in Pennsylvania. And you click your email and you say, yep, got it right here. It's that fast. But folks, there is a latency. Okay, so wonder if the latency starts to shift a little bit. Packets on the network shift. And that's just, you know, people will call you. I used to have one of our employees call and say, look, it's raining outside. My computer's running slower. I don't know if the rain had anything to do with it, but what they were experiencing was packet shifting. The packets lowering, it's delaying itself getting to that individual user. And we talked about that a lot tonight. Also, we talked about a VLANing, and I talked about on a past show about VLANing, how critical that was to individually separate your network out to kind of minimize that packet loss, that delay overall. Now, external agencies, e.g. universities, who provide public domain time servers are not obligated to continue the service or guarantee availability or accuracy. Wow. Imagine if Big Ben, everybody knows the time clock Big Ben, there was nobody to guarantee accuracy. Imagine when you pick up your cell phone, you look at it. Are you sure the time is actually right? If there's nobody out there guaranteeing the accuracy, how do we know that time is right? And folks, we live by our cell phones today. I know we do. We pick up our cell phones and we live by that cell phone being correct. That's the time I go by. That's how I know when to go to lunch. I look at my cell phone. It tells me the time. So those are a few of the drawbacks. Now, there's a better way to synchronize time on your network. A dedicated network time server protects you from security risk inherent to obtaining internet time. By installing a time server within your firewall, risk from the outsider minimized, and the timing accuracy of your network is maximized. So all they're saying here is you're going to build another server, you're going to build another unit to take care of your time in your network, and that computer is going to do it. You're also still going to have issues. There's going to be problems with your time. So be very careful, because that internal clock can go bad, the battery can go bad, the system can shut down. There is a million and one things I can go on for days about this. It's just so important. And I don't think there's any positively absolute idea out there of exactly how to get a guaranteed time every time you do this. Now, installing a network time server behind your firewall and isolating it from the internet provides the best security. We talked about that because UDP port 123 does not have to be open and you can shut it down. Folks, the majority of your networking gear, your networking servers, we've been asked to, and I know a lot of you out there listening to this show are probably people that say, look, co-hosting servers is a great idea. Sure it is. Till the internet goes down and you don't have a backup line. It's a wonderful idea. But when you go to log on your server, you know, you go to log on in the morning, somebody's trying to get on, they say, it says domain's not available. Where's it at? What's going on? And you find you don't have any internet, right? If you don't have any internet, you don't have any email for a couple hours. That's one thing. If you don't have any internet and you can't get on your domain controller and do your daily routine, your daily work, and your office people doing their daily thing, that is loss of productivity. You will probably lose your job. At the very most, you'll probably be suspended for about 3 months without pay. So we have to provide, our job as network specialists out there is to provide 99.8% accuracy. If you provided 99.9, you would own GoDaddy or 1-in-1 servers. So I say 99.8 because something can always go wrong. But keep your domains, keep your servers, keep everything you can keep inside of your firewall in your own building. All right. With that said, many of you know me, and many of you have heard my past shows on email and hosted email services. Email should not be in your domain. And a lot of you might even say, I may not ever listen to this podcast again, but we talked tonight a little bit on Geeksters about Exchange. Somebody mentioned Exchange. And I told them when I heard that, I seen a dinosaur walking behind me. Because I feel that having an email server in your rack today makes you an ISP. I was an ISP for years. I got calls at 3 a.m. because people weren't getting emails. I don't want those calls anymore. Hosted services, Google, and Microsoft and those companies hire a ton of people that work on that systems all the time. That's all they do. And they can do it better than we can. Now, I know you're saying, Jack, I'm an Exchange expert and I have my certification letter. That's fine and bless you. And I'm really happy for you. I really am. But I can't provide, when we switched to Google Apps, and though we did about 7 years ago now, and when we did that, my big selling point is I can't provide the backup services that Google can provide for us. And if you're in education, it's free. Why wouldn't you do it? It's free. Get out of that thing where this is mine. If I don't have it, they will fire me. They won't. We as technologists have so much more to do and so many more responsibilities that you don't need to be an ISP. You don't need to host your web pages in your building, and you don't need to worry about your email. But you do want to keep your domain controllers in your building. You want to have access to those. And not so much as a thing where, you know, you have control and you're the great conqueror of the domain controller. You want to make sure that that thing is available for your users to use when they log in the morning. Now, with that said, you can avoid the extra work of reconfiguring firewalls and routers that may require to allow the devices on your LAN to access the public time server. So again, we don't have to open that port. Because of minimal latency, the network time server on your LAN can reliably keep all servers, workstations, and network devices synchronized to within 1.5 to 2 milliseconds of each other. That's amazing. Remember I told you earlier I give 5 to 10 minutes variation when I set mine up? And that's just because, you know, if a Mac or something would go off a little bit, we can still make sure it's going to connect and we're not going to have that issue. So there you go. 1.5 to 2 milliseconds of each other is not too shabby. Now, remember, there are a vast amount of users these days relying on the time on their workstations. Because I told you, people don't wear wristwatches anymore. And if you do, I'm not knocking you. Wonderful. I can't because I use a laptop a lot. My wife loves to see me with her wristwatch on. It looks very nice. But when I use a laptop, it tends to scratch the laptop. And my laptop is more important than a watch. I kind of had to give one or the other. So I gave up the watch itself. And I guess most people, their cell phones are out of reach. I mean, mine's usually pretty close by. But we don't want our users missing their lunches and maybe even worse, a meeting with their CEO. And what I'm talking about here is you got to make sure your time is synchronizing properly because their desktop computers are relying on what you're doing on the back end. Remember I said a few shows ago, we talked about this, where the back end, people forget about the back end that are in the business because somebody's working at Microsoft Word or they're using LibreOffice and they're typing a document. They don't really know that when they hit save as, U drive or their home drive, they don't know where that goes, right? That goes back into our offices, back in those server rooms, back in those server racks, and those network attached storage devices that we have to maintain. So that's why all this stuff has to work really, really well together. Also, the reliability of your network servers and your workstation times are off, you will begin to experience all kind of issues. And trust me, you will experience tons of issues. I suggest when you put in managed switches, make sure those managed switches are talking back to your time server, whatever you set up, so all the time synchronize across every device in your network. It's so critically important. Folks, I hope you got something out of tonight's show. And tonight we have been talking about time servers and all things concerning time on your network. It's just so critical. I thought I would bring it to you tonight. I will put that link for that fix for the email that I got for the Windows XP and Windows 7 file sharing problem in the show notes tonight. You can look at that. If anybody else has any suggestions and anybody else has heard about this where you have a Windows 7 peer-to-peer network, Windows 7 machine running as your file server and Windows XP machines can't map to it, let me know what you're doing because I would like to send that back out to Bill and let him know what's going on. Again, before I close my show out, I want to send that special thanks out once again to Mike Smith from the Mike Tech Show. I've been listening to his show for so, so very long. It's a wonderful show. Yeah, he's a great guy. I wish I could have made one of his meetups because it would just been great to meet him and Carrie, shake their hands and say hello. But I do appreciate you playing that promo for me. And hopefully you enjoy my shows, Mike. And I also want to send a special shout out to Martin for having me on his show and Mitch and Tim for being on the Geeksters. I'm truly blown away by that. And I'm so humbled that you asked me to come along for the magical ride on your podcast. Thank you so much. Folks, please remember, if you use my Amazon link, it helps to support the show. And we talk about this as podcasters. And I know so many podcasters out there. I know Mike has one. And maybe the Geeksters have one on their website. But Amazon link is just, I say, to spread the love. So if you buy your Pampers today, maybe use one link from somebody. If you buy your server from Amazon, maybe use a link from somebody else's. But what happens here is it supports these shows by Amazon giving us like 10 cents back or 18 cents back on whatever purchase you're making. And once a month, they send us a check. It could be like $10. Maybe it can be $100. But that helps us support these shows, pay for the bandwidth we need, pay for the gear we need to record the shows and to produce these things. So it truly, truly helps. You know, and I don't really ask for donations for these shows because I like to pay it forward. I like to give what I know to you, because I've taken years, 27 years in the business to learn this stuff, and to drill it. You know, every day I'm drilling new stuff in my head, and I want to share it with you. And I think that's what a lot of podcasters do. They want to just share the love out there and give it back to you. So I don't ask for donations or anything like that. But if you're going to buy from Amazon anyway, click on the link. Now, I would ask, if you want to learn more about Windows Server 2008 R2, Windows Server 2012 R2, or VMware ESXi Server from A to Z. Somebody said, what does that mean? It means from install to administration. You're going to do it all. And all you got to do is please sign up for one of my courses. Go to tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Click from the look at the online class link at the top of the page and click on that link. The courses are self-paced. So what that means is when you sign up, you don't have to say, okay, well, Jack's going to start his course on September 18th. I got to be at the computer at 7 o'clock so I can start watching this course. No, that's not the way I wanted to set these courses up. This course is very much, on your own pace. All you got to do is once you go through, you do hit the PayPal link. You do have to pay for the course. It's not free. And the reason you have to pay for it is because it's an actual learning course. So you're going to go from step one, step two, step three. And you can, you know, people said, Jack, I can learn on YouTube. You can, but you got to drill around for hours and waste a lot of your time. Time is valuable to people. So for this low price, you can just go through the course from start to finish. And you're going to do it at your own pace. So if you want to watch them all in a week, if you want to take a year, it doesn't matter. You're always on. So again, the courses are self-paced. You watch a video. You take a short quiz. It's two or three questions just to make sure you're getting it. Once you complete the course, I will mail you a certificate, which is good for framing. A lot of people add those to their resume, and they send those in, and they get pretty decent jobs from people that have been emailing me back. So I've been pretty happy that I'm able to kind of give you a little bit added bonus information. Once again, you can sign for these courses at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. If you have any questions on it, just email me at jackstechcorner@gmail.com, and I will gladly fill you in about any information you want to know about the courses. Folks, I hope you have a great work week this week, and I will be back here next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Back on Spreaker with another show. So if you want to listen to me live, check out Spreaker.com or go to tipsfromtheserverroom.com and click on the radio link at the top. And at 8 p.m., refresh the page, and I'll be live, and you can chat to me there. Friends, take care, and keep those servers humming. Keep your networks wired, and I'll see you back here next week on tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Take care, everybody. You just listened to Tips from the Server Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long.